Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, November 23rd, 2013. This is episode 1033. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. To get our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by Ting.com. Ting is a mobile phone service that just makes sense. Save money with Ting. You'll pay for what you use. And Ting doesn't require a contract. Plus, Ting offers unlimited devices on a single account. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit techguy.ting.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about tech, computers, the internet, you know, all that jazz. Cell phones, home theater. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number, 888-827-5536, toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside. Use Skype. You'll still reach me. Aren't you going to ask me why I was late, Heather? Phone ringing.
Oh, were you late? I didn't notice.
Xbox One. Couldn't stop.
Oh, no.
Couldn't stop playing.
Oh, you're a teenager.
No. You know, it's a common misconception that gaming is for kids. Most gamers are young adult men. I mean, admittedly, I'm not a young adult anymore. But most gamers are men with some disposable income. Hey, the Xbox One is $500.
It ain't cheap being
a
gamer.
Cheap. And each game is $60.
Good God.
Yeah.
And I'd rather have a crack cocaine habit.
No, you wouldn't.
Kidding.
Although there are some similarities, I must say. I got it yesterday. Lori, my UPS driver, got a big smooch about 2 in the afternoon. I said, I thought it wasn't going to come till 8. I'm so happy, happy, happy. And that's the last anybody saw of me for about 24 hours. I just, not that long. 36 hours. It's my job, you know. It's not, this isn't for fun. The fact that I played Rise, Son of Rome, and Battlefield 4, and Connect Rivals, and actually, I could go on. Assassin's Creed 3. I did that for you. I didn't do that for me. It wasn't selfish. It was selfish. So now I've played with both the hot consoles. You know, this is the first time, I think, ever both Sony and Microsoft had a hot console out at the same time, within a week of one another. And, of course, just in the nick of time for the what is euphemistically known as the holiday buying season. The fourth quarter is probably a big time for these consoles, although the nature of console gaming is, and at $500, mommy and daddy aren't buying this for Junior. I bought 5 games and the console. That's $800. Then you have to have, on the Xbox anyway, an Xbox Gold subscription. That's another $60 a year. It adds up. And it only comes with one controller. So if it's a household gift, you got to buy another controller or two or three. I mean, it really adds up. Now, I got to say, that's one of the big differences between the two. The PlayStation 4 is really clearly aimed at gamers. This is a gaming machine. Yeah, it has a Blu-ray player in it, as did the last PlayStation, but really it's a gaming machine. Microsoft has decided that in order to get the family to spend $500 plus games, and by the way, you need to have an Xbox Gold subscription, a $60 a year subscription, to do most of the non-gaming stuff on here. Microsoft decided to build in a lot of non-gaming stuff. I can watch Netflix, Amazon, Hulu. And, of course, Microsoft's own Xbox Movies and Music. It is really more of a media center. And I tell you what, it's pretty darn impressive. Yeah, they had some launch day hiccups. I still can't get YouTube working. There's, you know, a few things missing. It has a Blu-ray player, first time Microsoft's done that, but it doesn't have 3D, nor does the PS4. And it's kind of weird. It's really like a computer because you have to download the Blu-ray player. You have to download Hulu Plus, Netflix, all of this stuff. It doesn't come on it. You download it. But the thing that I found most interesting, Microsoft requires now that you include, this is part of the package, this is why it's $100 more than the PlayStation 4, this Kinect thing that they were selling on the Xbox 360. The idea is it has a camera and a microphone in it, and you can play games by moving around in front of it, but you can also talk to it. And that when you see it and when you start playing with it, you realize why Microsoft did this. You walk in the room, you say, Xbox, turn on. The TV turns on, the cable box turns on. Your AV receiver turns on, your Xbox turns on. The camera turns on, sees you, logs you in, says, hi, Leo. Logs you in. If there's another person in the room, it sees them, up to six people, and says, hi, Sally, hi, Jane, hi, Phone Ranger, and turns on. And you can talk to it. You could say, Xbox, watch HBO. And HBO, it knows where it is. The TV and the cable box suddenly are on HBO. You could say, Xbox, play Call of Duty Ghosts, and the game launches. It's actually works really well, the voice control. It comes with Skype, not working yet, but maybe it is by now. It wasn't working last night. But when you're on a Skype call, it sees who's talking in the room and zooms in on that person. There's some very interesting features Microsoft's built into this that are quite impressive. And Sony didn't do any of this. Sony said, well, no, we're going to be a better game machine. And gamers, I think, are excited about the Sony PlayStation 4 because on paper, it is a better game machine, better graphics, etc. Although, I'd be hard-pressed to tell the difference. I think most people would. It's not perfect. All's not perfect. At least yesterday, it took a while to do things. I think it was very popular. But I have to say, I am very impressed in a way I haven't been in a long time. And in a way, I haven't been from Microsoft in an even longer time. This is clearly Microsoft's pièce de résistance. Really an interesting box that does some very interesting things. And I have to say, the PlayStation 4, despite the fact that it had more pre-orders, a million pre-orders, we don't know yet how many for the Xbox One, but I'm sure it was less. A million pre-orders. I think that people might be, and they'll never admit it, but some of the people who ran out and got the Sony and were ribbing the Xbox One people, saying, yeah, we got 1080p, we got this, we got that, might be looking a little bit sideways now at the Xbox people. And I also think that down the road, Sony's going to have to respond to this, or they're going to miss out. The Xbox One really is more than a game machine. It is designed to take over your home entertainment center. It is designed to be a media box. So it's very intriguing. Very intriguing to me. And I found the gaming experience excellent. There are downsides. You turn on the Xbox. First, it has to download almost half a gigabyte worth of updates immediately before it can do anything. And then each time you put a game in, even though you bought the game disc, it then goes out and downloads many, many gigabytes of data, additional data. The games themselves are, in most cases, you can only get 4.7 gigs on a DVD, 9.4 if you use both sides. Most of these games are 50 gigabytes and up. It only comes with a 500 gigabyte hard drive, so I can see I'm going to have a crisis soon. I'm going to have to decide. This Microsoft has done an impressive job, and if you're if you're one of the people who said, when's Apple going to do the TV? Steve Jobs said, on, you know, just before he died, we think the TV experience is terrible and we think we've solved the problem. And everybody assumed from that Apple was going to do a TV. You know, this might be kind of what the Apple TV was supposed to be, a TV you can talk to, a TV where you no longer have to know how to use the remotes at all. You talk to it and it plays what you want. That's impressive. That's impressive. So I was kind of blown away. All right, let's take your calls. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. You know, when you're a tech guy, the Christmas season comes a little bit early because you have to get all the stuff that, you know, is about to hit the store. So iPad Air, yeah, check. iPad Mini with Retina display, check. Oh, I've moved way on from that. Lumia 1520, the 6-inch Windows phone. And I just got, check, and I just got the, this is the Nokia 2520. Only two companies make tablets based on Microsoft's Windows RT operating system. Microsoft with the Surface 2 and Surface 1, I guess. And the Nokia with the 2520. Nice tablet. I like it very much. It doesn't have a keyboard, though, and it's not going to get one for a while, unfortunately. But in many ways, this is a... I think this is the future of Windows, perhaps. At least Microsoft seems to. So, let's see. PlayStation 4, check. Xbox One, check. By the way, Xbox One, people are complaining about the noise the Xbox 360 made. Yeah, I always felt like there was a jet airplane about to take off in my living room. Wasn't a good choice for the living room for that reason. And it didn't have a Blu-ray player. Well, Microsoft's completely responded to that. Both the Xbox One and PlayStation 4 are silent, as far as I could tell. Very quiet. They have fans, with one fan, both, but they're big and slow and quiet. And the Blu-ray player, I watched a movie, looks great. And you can command it, by the way, with your voice. You can say, Xbox, pause. Get up. Go get a sandwich. Xbox, play. Pretty cool. So... That's why I'm late. I couldn't stop. Heather Homan, phone ranger, has been collecting phone calls while I've been chatting. You got somebody. Who should I start with?
Let's start with Andrew in Dayton, Ohio. It's a good question. It might take a little sleuthing, I think.
I like sleuthing. Call me Sherlock. Andrew Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
I am doing good. Had a question for you about mobile phones, tablets, Android specifically. I've never really used an iPhone, so I don't know if this would apply. But as an example, this morning I'm tuned into iHeartRadio to listen to some marginal legal advice on a station out your way
from Mr. Bill Handel.
That's correct. And boy, was it marginal today!
I love Phil.
People are probably going to jail now because of anyway,
funniest radio lawyer ever.
I know. Yeah. So I'm using the iHeartRadio app on my phone or my tablet, and I want to shut it down. So I go to, like, the system menu and hit exit, okay? It shuts down. But then if I go into manage apps, I notice that it's still running.
This is on all mobile devices now, including tablets, including Windows tablets. This is the way things are, and... You have, because you used computers in the old, dim, dark days of computing, you have this notion that a program closes.
Yes.
No. Forget it. Don't forget about it. No need anymore to exit programs. When Android phones first came out, there was a brisk market in task killers because people would say, well, it's got to be using up battery. And maybe in some of those badly written programs they were. But nowadays, on modern versions of Android, anything Android 4 or later... and modern versions of iOS, and even on Windows 8.1 or Windows RT, you don't really close apps. You can, in some cases, in many cases you can. On Apple, you can't. And it looks like they're still running when you look at recent apps. Both on the iPad, iPhone, and Android devices, there is a recent apps command. And when you see it, but those are just apps that were run at one point. The way it works now is the operating system just takes care of it for you. So you listen to iHeartRadio, you go do something else. After a while, the operating system says, I think he's done with that. and closes it. Or it does it in stages, though. It reclaims, it first reclaims memory. It halts the CPU, and eventually it will close it, but never takes it out of the recent apps list.
So am I just being like OCD to every time I use iHeartRadio as an example to actually go into manage apps and then force close it when I'm actually done with it?
There's no need. Don't. Stop.
So it's not wasting battery. It's not wasting memory.
Nope.
Okay, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me then.
What happened is people who make operating systems finally realized that non-sophisticated users never closed programs. They would do another thing and another thing and another thing. And that was a drain. And so and especially on mobile devices, they said, you know, what are we making them do that for? Why do they have to even think about that? We'll take care of it. And it's handled at the operating system level. All apps, if they're properly written, do exactly the right thing. For instance, they'll get sent a signal saying, hey, we're going to close you. If you need to save anything, please do. So they'll do it. I mean, it's very nice. It's not doing anything. Now, if you're listening to the show in the background, you should pause it. But I'm sure you're doing that, right?
Sure.
Yeah. That uses bandwidth. But there's no need to close the app.
I guess the thing about like an iHeartRadio app in particular, it's got so many permissions. It wants to control my Bluetooth, my microphone. It wants to know what I'm drinking out of my coffee cup. You know what I mean?
And so there's OCD and there's paranoid.
Well, I guess
they're different diagnoses in the DSM-3.
Maybe Dr. Matt can prescribe me something to get me through the rest of my phone day.
So there is OCD. There is a reasonable paranoia. You know, people are saying, "Hey, Leo, you know that Kinect? It's always listening. Of course it is, because I can say Xbox turn on and it'll turn on. It's always looking. That camera's always on because it can see me and it says, oh, hi, Leo. So aren't you worried? No.
I find that completely creepy.
And yeah, I understand, but that's because and this is just like it is related in a sense to this closing of apps thing. People are anthropomorphizing machines. They're acting like they're humans. The Xbox Kinect... In theory, the Xbox Kinect could be piping video and audio from your home directly to the National Security Agency.
Right.
In theory.
Is there truth to the rumor, for instance, that you're watching on, I think it's the PlayStation, the new PlayStation, and it's scanning everybody's retinas in the room.
In theory.
And say you're watching a Blu-ray movie and somebody comes in who doesn't own that Blu-ray movie and shuts it down.
I wouldn't put that past Sony, but no, that's not true. You're joking, I know.
Well, actually not. No, I've read that. Now, actually,
you've actually read that.
A pretty cool feature, you know, because at this point, I don't know who I can have over to watch a Blu-ray with me.
I guarantee you it's not a feature. That is paranoia taken to the nth degree. I understand why people are paranoid, and we certainly have evidence that the government does like to snoop in places it shouldn't be. But it's in the interest of all these companies to prevent that as best they can and understand it's not necessary for the Xbox One to be – in fact, it would be dumb of the Xbox One to be sending audio back to the home office or video back to the home office. It's not. It's local. Just as when I say, okay, Google Now to my phone, it's not sending everything I say back to the home office. It's waiting and locally waiting for the right phrase and then acting upon it. Now – anything I say after that sent back to the home office because it has to do searching. In fact, with the Xbox One, you can say Xbox Bing and do a Bing search. And that will have to be sent back to servers. So we do, I don't want to say to people, oh, you shouldn't worry that nobody's watching, because we now know that in many cases, at least the government's watching, and probably a lot of private industry is watching in some degree. But I'm more worried about the government than private industry. Private industry's interest is really in making you feel better about all this, because all the cool things they want to do require this. Anyway, don't worry about it. Let it be. Scott Wilkinson coming up, home theater, right after this. Scott Wilkinson is the editorial director at the AVS Forum. He is a home theater guru and expert, also a home theater geek. That's the name of his show on our network, twit.tv. Every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. And he joins us every week to talk home theater. Now, I know you're not a gamer, Scott.
No, I'm not.
But I have to say, come over.
Okay, all right.
Come over and just look, because I think this is a very interesting take on TV. I've used the voice activation. My Samsung OLED has voice activation. It's nowhere near as good as what Microsoft has done with the Xbox One. It's very good. And you can say a show name, you can say a channel name, and it just knows and goes.
And it doesn't have to, like, learn your voice or anything like that?
No.
It just knows?
Yeah. It's good. It's impressive.
Well, I will have to check that out then.
Yep. You know what, though? It doesn't know. It never heard of my TV.
Well, the OLED's pretty new.
It's very new, yeah. It has a lot of TVs, but it doesn't know the commands for my OLED.
Yeah, somebody in the chat room said it didn't know their Kuro either, which is old.
That's not good.
So,
but, you know, this is really a computer. We'll be updated a lot all the time. So yeah. I don't think that's a big deal. Yeah,
exactly.
So what do you want to talk about, my friend?
Well, I thought it might be a good time to talk a little bit about the upcoming shopping day, which is known as Black Friday.
Yeah. You know, I wonder how big a deal that is these days. Is it still a big deal?
Well, I mean, certainly my inbox is filling up with Black Friday deals.
Mostly because people want to know what, you know, it's not that they want to get in line or are motivated to get in line. There's nothing magical about the day after Thanksgiving now that we can shop online.
True.
But
and a lot of stores are saying pre-Black, you can get the Black Friday deal now.
Yeah. I think because they've realized. However, in order to get you into stores, since so many people buy online now, stores like Staples and Target and Walmart and Best Buy are offering ridiculous prices. Just usually they have a loss leader. And often it's a TV, usually not a very good TV.
Well, it's true. And what I do is I go to my favorite Black Friday website is bfads.net.
Yeah, there's several of these, aren't there?
There's several of them. And I've looked at a bunch of them. But this one is really good because you can say, I want to look for TVs. And it'll show you the deals at a bunch of different retailers. Most of these websites are retailer specific. You can say, oh, I want to go and see what Walmart has, or I want to go and see what Sears has. But I wanted to look across retailers to see who had the best deals on various things. And I was looking mostly at TVs, and you're right, there's a bunch of TVs that I would not recommend, even at the outrageous prices that they're advertising. But I was looking for ones that I thought would actually be good, good TVs. And I found quite a few, actually. Sears turns out to be a pretty good place to go for TVs, LED, LCD TVs in particular is what I was looking for. I also looked at plasmas, but none of the Panasonics are on sale because they're probably also already on sale because they're on their way out. So I looked mostly at LED TVs, and Sears is typically offering a savings of 20 to 25% on the good ones. And the good ones that I looked at were mostly from Samsung. The F6300 model is a good one. The FH6030 is a less expensive one. BJ's has that for $580 down from $850. That's over a 30% discount. The Samsung F7100 is a really good LED TV, and Sears has that in the 20% discount range. Vizio's got some good deals actually out there. Target has the E470i. It's a 47-inch with direct backlighting, direct LED backlighting, not edge lighting, which I generally don't like. And local dimming, believe it or not, for an entry-level TV, this thing has full-array backlighting with local dimming, this 47-inch model at Target for $380.
It sounds like it'd be a great extra TV for the guest room, the kids' room.
Seriously. Yeah. That's almost 35% off. Walmart has the E601i, which is edge-lit, but it's a 60-inch and very well-regarded by the press all over the place. 60-inch TV for $688, down from $1,000. So, you know, that these particular deals that I found, those two Vizios, the Samsung F6300, 7100, and FH6030 are the ones that I would be looking at to find the best deals on because they're actually good TVs. You know, the brands like Emerson and Insignia, those are Emerson's an independent brand, but Insignia is a Best Buy, you know, house brand, I think. Brands like that I don't normally recommend because they're just not that good. But the Samsungs are good.
This is encouraging because my sense was it would always be those kind of off brands that they're luring people in you know, with 69-cent TVs that you, even at that price, you probably don't want.
But
these
don't
are
want
decent
it. That's
TVs.
Exactly right.
These are not bad.
Exactly.
Now, as you said, that Vizio is great, but it is only 35% off. We're not, you know, we're not a huge amount off, right?
Well, no, we're not talking 50 or 80% off.
Right.
That's true.
Right.
That's true. But hey, 30% is 30%.
I will take it. Absolutely.
Exactly right.
Probably, though, not the only time of the year you're going to see a discount like this. Also,
probably
right?
not. No, yeah. That's true. And I imagine those house brands are probably more discounted. But
right.
as you say, if it's really, really cheap, but it's really, really cheap, then it's probably not necessarily worth it.
Yeah.
I looked at Blu-ray players, and Blu-ray players are now all under $100 anyway. So it's like, you know, the Black Friday isn't so big a deal on Blu-ray players, in my opinion. I'm just working now on a buying guide. Actually, AVS Forum is publishing a series of buying guides. LED TVs not up yet. Soundbar's about to go up. I found a couple of soundbars in the Black Friday ads that I thought were really good. Sears has the Sony HT-CT260 soundbar for $200, down from $300. So that's the 33% savings. And the Vizio S4251W is $250, down from $350. That one is interesting because it has an actual physical pair of surround speakers that attach by wires to a wireless subwoofer. So you put the subwoofer in the back of the room, connect these surround speakers to it, and then they communicate wirelessly with the front soundbar and gives you a true 5.1 experience for $250. It's really pretty good.
Is it going to get better in January? In other words, are these the best prices of the year in most cases? Or?
Well, that's a good question. I don't often make it a habit to look at the prices in January.
I feel like the weekend before the Super Bowl. They're really trying to lure people in.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. That is the biggest time of year for sales of TVs specifically, and big ones, big screen TVs. So it may very well be.
Should one wait?
I honestly don't know the answer to that question. I suspect that you won't get that much better a deal. It might get a slightly better deal
but
I don't think it's going to be tremendously better than it is now. These prices are pretty darn good. Here's a 55 inch for $700, 55 inch for $900. That's a 6,300.
So you is all this from, BF ads,
bfads.net.
Dr. Scott Wilkinson, avsforum.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott, Long Beach, California. You're next. Leo Laporte here. Hi, Scott.
Hello there, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good. I've got a question for you. I've got my Verizon Fios router set up in the house, and my office is out in the garage, so a lot of chicken wire between the two points.
Yeah.
A couple walls worth of chicken wire.
Yeah, chicken wire is death to Wi-Fi.
Yes. I got a hard wire out to the garage, and I'd like to get some wireless out there, and what do I do?
You have a hard wire to the garage.
Yes, I do.
But you don't want to use it anymore.
Well, I've got the desktop that it's plugged into, but yes,
I see. That's how you're doing it. Okay, you're doing internet connection sharing through a wire.
Right.
Yeah, I don't blame you for wanting to go wireless. How far is the garage?
50 feet.
Yeah, that's not too bad. Wi-Fi. Nominally, the range of Wi-Fi A, B, and G is 150 feet. N, in theory, can go farther. Of course, the farther you are from the Wi-Fi, the more the signal is attenuated, turned down, in effect. That's what the chicken wire does, too. It turns it down. So you'll see, you'll be right next to your Verizon wireless router, and you'll have 5 bars. And then as you go farther and farther away, it goes down. You can still use Wi-Fi with fewer bars, but what happens? Your speed goes down, and it may, in fact, if you get down low enough, it may, in fact, drop out. So there's a couple of things you can do. Probably the easiest thing to do, and this might be tricky, what do they use, Alaritech or something for the Verizon stuff? They use an odd brand. is to get a Wi-Fi extender. If they offer such a thing, it's always best to use the same brand of Wi-Fi extender as your Wi-Fi access point. So you may be able to get it to work with a third-party wireless extender, Wi-Fi extender, but it's because this the standard that this uses, the wireless distribution system, was loosely written. So implementations are not completely compatible. So if the ActionTech router, the Wi-Fi router, you're using the one that Verizon gave you, right?
Correct.
Yeah, that's an ActionTech. If you can find an ActionTech repeater, then that would be fine. And what you would do is then set that somewhere so that it's getting a good signal from the base station. And then it's in, these repeaters are really just Wi-Fi routers in bridge mode. They're the same as a regular access point. It's just bridge mode version, which means they don't do any work. They just pass it along. And, you know, by putting that, say, midway to the garage, you might even need to use another one after that. You can use multiple ones and extend it. Eventually, you can get a cloud of connectivity all the way out to the garage. If you know that you have chicken wire in the walls, then going line of sight's a good idea. So I bet you there's a window, perhaps, that you could put the extender in that can see the ActionTech. And maybe if it can see the garage and the ActionTech, you're golden.
That's the problem. I don't have that. The garage, the way it's set up, it's all,
yeah.
So all you, covered all the way around.
You got to fool around with it. Yeah. There's no magic with radio frequency. It's actually, there's all magic. There's nothing but magic with radio frequency. It's, you know, usually we think of computers as deterministic, but as soon as you get in these analog worlds of radio frequency, you know, things are bouncing in strange, unpredictable ways. And sometimes something can work perfectly. It just, you know, you've done this with a television antenna, if you're old enough, and you and I both are. You remember the days when you'd hold the antenna, put one leg in the air, and the picture would be perfect?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, and as a ham radio operator, we got the radio part.
Oh, you're a ham. Well, then you know all about this.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you know all about this. So there's another thing. Do you have power from the house going to the garage?
From the house? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So another thing you might want to look into, and this is something hams hate, but it's fine in this context, is power line networking.
Okay.
It's actually gotten better and better and better. If you don't have a junction box between you and the garage, you know, if it's all one grid, that actually might be the best way to do it. In effect, it turns it into a wired network.
Okay. Yeah, I hadn't looked at that and considered it because last I looked at it.
It was terrible.
Ages ago. It was horrible.
It was terrible. Yeah, but it's gotten better. It's gotten better.
Is there nothing I could plug into, say, the wired thing at the end, like a router that I put into bridge mode or something like
sure.
that?
Yeah, sure. I do this all the time. So I have a wireless access point, and then I got a new one. So I took my old one. They're both Apple, so they're compatible, and uses an extender, but it is also a wireless access point, and so it has Ethernet coming out of it, and I use it as if it's wired.
Okay.
So in effect, it becomes a base unit.
Got it.
Yeah, but so there's a couple of different ways to try this. You want to get, I understand now, you want to get internet out to your ham shack.
There you go.
I understand. That's exactly what, of course. That's because nowadays with the ham radio, you know, a computer can be such a boon. You can look stuff up on, you know, it's so much easier. You can use an electronic logbook. Do you use a computer logbook?
I have it. At the moment, I'm not doing that. Yeah. I'm looking more at, APRS and things like that.
Okay, then there's all these digital things, which are great. Yeah, APRS and D-Star and all that. It's really an interesting hybrid world now in the ham radio world. So I understand you really want to get out there. You could put a router out there and then connect it wired if you had a wireless access point. The problem is, you know, you got to buy all this stuff and try it. So if you can buy it from somebody, who'll take it back if it doesn't work. Then you could see. Power line might be the best way. And power line does show up as a wired network in the ham shack.
Okay.
All right.
We'll give it a try.
All right. See you on Echolink.
Okay. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Barry in Sierra Madre, California. Barry, you're next. Leo Laporte, hey. The tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Good. You know, I want to get, actually, I think it's your sponsor, DSL Extreme, and I want to get it without having a Verizon telephone number.
They call it dry loop.
Yes, and I want to know, I'm getting varying stories if it's possible or not to do it.
Verizon does not like to do dry loop. So here's the deal. You're really in the situation where you've got two companies that don't like each other. Verizon wants you to use them as your internet service provider, right?
Right.
And you're using an independent internet service provider riding on their copper.
Right.
And they're required to do that by the Federal Communications Commission. But the FCC does not seem to make them be nice about it. Hmm. And so imagine now Verizon doesn't even make any money for phone service. Right. They're just letting, you know, basically they must see this as free riding on their copper. They put that copper in your house. They own the copper.
Right.
And
yeah.
And they don't want anybody else to use it. Now, I don't think the FCC – I don't know if the FCC requirements extend a dry loop or not. Some carriers – some phone companies will do it. Some will not. Basically, I think you just have to plead your case with Verizon and hope that they'll be nice about it.
Really? I have to plead my case with Verizon?
Isn't that sad?
That's terrible, and I don't think they're sympathetic.
Are you kidding? They want you to use Verizon. They don't want you using DSL Extreme. The other thing you might do is talk to DSL Extreme.
Okay.
One of the reasons I like using an independent internet service provider is they interface with the phone company, not you.
Right, right.
Let them do it.
All right. Well, so you're saying technically they're supposed to do it, but in reality it doesn't.
I don't know if they're – I should look and see. And maybe somebody in the chat room knows if they're legally required to offer dry loop. My sense is they are not.
I see. Okay. All right. Well, I shall carry on one way or the other somehow.
Carry on. Yeah. I mean, this may be a non-starter for DSL Extreme. You know, you might have to. And see, this is what the FCC was trying to avoid. Notice, though, they do not require cable companies to do this. If you have a cable connection, the only internet provider is the cable company. And so that's a real disparity. And it was because I think the cable companies were newer into the game than the phone companies. I think the FCC presumed by this time the phone companies amortized the cost of putting in that copper. But the cable companies may still be – I mean, how long has that cable been in your house? 20, 40 years? I don't know. I think they've amortized the cost of it. But for whatever reason, this is how the FCC is. So there, you certainly can get dry loop from some – phone companies.
Yeah.
In fact, Randy's in our chat room saying, I've had DSL Extreme for 5 years on AT&T with dry loop, but that's AT&T. So you just got to talk Verizon into it.
Cool.
All right.
Okay. Thank you, Leo.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It is a weird competitive environment we live in. And the truth is, you want to get better internet, you want to get faster internet, you want to reduce caps. The best thing we could have is real competition. But in most cases, that's just not the case. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our website is techguylabs.com. And the reason I say that is you can always go to techguylabs.com. And if I mention a website or a product, the links are all there. Thanks to James DeRuvo, who is literally scribbling away as I talk, putting it on the website. Josh Windisch then comes in from our office the next day, and he puts the audio from the show and the video from the show up on the website. You can actually go to any individual question from any individual show and watch or listen to the question, my answer, read a transcription of it. And then if you have an opinion or a thought, if you would add it in the comments, I would really appreciate that. We don't charge for the website. You have my word. We never will. It's free, thanks to our great sponsors who provide the wherewithal to do this. And I just like the idea of making a better and better database of information and answers to people's questions. So that's techguylabs.com. Of course, the phone number's there. The link to the chat room if you want to join us in our chat room. We always have several hundred, usually more like 1,000 people in the chat room, kibitzing away in the background as I talk about things. But the main thing is the number, 8888, Ask Leather. My name is not Leather. I was starting to say Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, and I combined Leo and Heather, and I got Leather, which wasn't really my intent. Leather Hammond. Have you ever considered that as a nickname? No.
That was a nickname.
You're wearing
and we've retired
a great caveman vest. It looks like you should be in the Flintstones. Or it's very 60s. Didn't they wear stuff like that in the 60s?
60s, 70s. I'm all about that.
Love that. Who should I talk to next?
We'll just pet it. Let's talk to Brittany. She needs a recommendation. I know you like to help people spend their money.
It's my favorite thing. Hi, Brittany. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes, my name's Brittany, and I was calling. I'm going into nursing school coming up in February.
Congratulations. I think that's a great career.
Thank you. So I looked at a couple of tablets that I think would be helpful for me when I go into the program. I looked at the Samsung Galaxy 10.1 mm-hmm. as well as the Google Nexus and the iPad Air.
It's so funny that you should ask this question. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy, just asked me the same question. He said, should I get a Samsung tablet or a Google tablet?
Yeah, I heard that a little bit when I was on the hold.
Yeah. And then you threw in, and I think rightly so, the iPad. So what really comes down to two things, what you're going to do with it, and then a matter of personal taste, frankly, because the tablets have gotten better and better on both sides, and I don't think there's, you know, quality-wise, much of a difference. But what do you want to do with it?
Well, I really like the features on the Samsung Galaxy, the multitasking, as well as being able to use the S-Stylus.
Okay. Okay.
Pen, as they call it.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, that's unique to the Samsung.
But I have had an iPhone, and I really wanted to be able to link it to my phone as well because I need the updates. And
yeah, if you're already in the Apple world, sometimes it's better to stay in the Apple world. In fact, really, that's their big selling point. And it's somewhat true of Android as well. You know, once you enter that ecosystem, there's less friction using something from another ecosystem. So, but again, is this for school?
Yeah, it's for school. So basically taking notes, using the planner, searching things, YouTube, stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, because the iPad is more mature, there's a broader range of software to support students on that. There's great note-taking software like Penultimate. There's really good school time management software out there. I mean, I think that's something where Apple's been around for a while and there's a broader range of stuff developed for it. What it lacks is the one thing that you mentioned on the Samsung, which is a stylus. So with the iPad, you're either typing your notes in or you can get a third party stylus on the iPad, and you could do handwriting, but it's not as good. I mean, do you want to handwrite your notes?
Yeah, I kind of like that feature a lot, and I like how you could hoping that if I did get an iPad, because I do like the more Apple stuff better, because it seems more built better. And
yeah, it's more elegant.
It lasts longer.
Yeah. I don't know if that's true anymore. I think the Nexus 10, the Samsung Galaxy Note 10.1, those are very well made.
And right, I just didn't like the color on the Nexus. That's the only thing. It didn't look as bright when I was looking at the screen.
Okay. And that's actually true of the Galaxy even more so, because they have a pressure sensitive touch layer on top of it that does dim, in my opinion, it reduces the quality of the screen a little bit. I think if you really want to use a stylus, there's really no question you should get a Galaxy Note.
Okay.
That's the multitasking to me is not significant. They really push it in the ads for Samsung. I don't find myself ever using it. You know, it's not such a big deal just to go back and forth. And how often are you gonna be watching YouTube and then taking notes? Maybe you are. Maybe there's videos on nursing on YouTube. You know, and you want to take notes as you're watching it. So that might be a good use for it, I guess. I never find myself doing that. You don't want a laptop.
I looked at the Microsoft Surface because I kind of want something that I can hybrid. Take along with me,
Right. I think that's not a bad choice. The Surface has a keyboard that you can detach, so then you have a tablet when you want a tablet. But if you want to type, like you want to write a paper or take more elaborate notes faster, that's a pretty, that's a, attractive. Now we're talking some real money, though.
Right.
Surface, if you get the Surface 2... and a keyboard, you're talking about $600-$700.
Yeah. No, I think I have like a budget of about you know, 1,000 to 1,200.
Oh, all right. Well, that's a good size.
I have a good savings for it.
Good for you. I think, well, in that case, I think the Surface is probably a very good choice. It comes with Microsoft Office built in. I think
it's still like that Windows operating system. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. Well, you know, so now this comes. We've talked a little bit about what you want to do, and right. based on taking notes, handwriting notes, there's no question that the Samsung would be the right choice. Mm-hmm. However, there's also this matter, as I mentioned, is functionality, but also taste, personal preference, and it sounds like you have a personal preference for the iPad.
Mm-hmm.
And you do already know how to use it because you have an iPhone. All the apps that you want are there. What you lose is you just really can't. I mean, handwriting notes on an iPad, you can do it, but it's not perfect.
Okay.
So, do you know if you would need to use Office in school? Are you going to have papers?
Yeah, I was reading up on nursing forums, and one of the downsides to getting Apples was not being able to open up some of the programs.
Ah, that's a big problem. So there's software you need to use.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, see? Well, that comes under the heading of what do you want to do? If there are programs you need to use in nursing school that run on Windows, you shouldn't even get a Surface 2. You should get a Surface 2 Pro. That's real Windows.
Okay.
You shouldn't even get a Surface 2. If you don't, I mean, look, you'll get used to Windows. That's not the end of the world.
Okay.
And if you have to run Windows software, I think you need to get a Windows machine. What are you going to do if you don't?
Right.
Okay. There are other good choices in that realm. The Lenovo Carbon Touch. Given your price point, you can look at some, you know, your budget's pretty good. You can look at some, the Lenovo Yoga, which is kind of interesting. I think that there are some real reasons to go with Windows, much as I can tell you don't want to. If you have to run the software in school, you got to do it. Check with your school, too. They may have some discounts. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Bad luck. Some nights I call it a draw. Some nights I wish that my lips could build a castle. Some nights I wish they'd just fall off.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. So I am open to criticism. I know I'll get some. This is a good thing to go to the webpage. Help her call her out. You heard what she needed, what she wanted, and she was a little bit on the fence. It's one of those things where you can tell what somebody wants. She wanted to buy an iPad. But then you understand she wanted also to take notes, so she probably needs a Samsung tablet. Oh, but then, by the way, I found out that the software that I need to run in nursing school only runs on Windows. Well, this might be bad news, but you need a Windows computer. The good news is, in her price point, $1,200, there are lots of great choices for Windows 8.1 notebooks. Get one with touch. You know, if you get a tablet, you probably can do handwriting on most of the, and, you know, with like OneNote, which is Microsoft's note-taking app. And have pretty good results. So that might be the great choice. A Surface Pro 2. It's going to be right at the edge of what you can afford, but I think that's a good choice. And I think there are third-party, Lenovo, for instance, that makes some very nice Windows 8.1 stuff. It's hard, you know, if you're in the Apple ecosystem, it's hard to buy a Windows machine. No, really? I got to buy a Windows? Oh, no. Laxman, Fort Defiance, Arizona. What a great... Is that where F Troop was shot? No, probably not. Hi, how you doing, Laxman? Do you play lacrosse?
Hey.
Hey.
Leo.
Yes.
How are you doing? I'm a long-time viewer since the days of ZDTV.
Welcome. Well, thank you.
I've been trying to get all of you since Screensaver, but finally I get to talk to you after
a long year. You've been trying to talk to me since the screen... Since 2004...
Well, before that, when you had Soldat O'Brien as your co-host.
Oh, that goes back to 1994. So you've been trying to talk to me for almost 20 years.
I guess. Hey, by the way, where is Chris Perillo nowadays? I haven't, you know, heard of him.
He's doing Chris Perillo. If you Google Chris Perillo or Locker Gnome, which is his brand name, you'll see he's a very busy guy. He's become a YouTube phenomenon. He does a lot of YouTube videos. He's what they call a daily vlogger. He does a daily video blog. Vlogger is the worst word in the world.
What makes me laugh, one time he was in a call for help, and he had a life-size photo of you, and you came over and took it away, and he dragged he grabbed your foot, and you dragged
him. I dragged him along. He's only about 3 feet tall, so I think people don't understand that Chris is very small. And no, I love Chris. He's a good friend, and he's doing very well for himself.
His
Locker Gnome conferences are huge, and of course he's become a celebrity on YouTube, which is neat.
And Patrick Norton is still with you, right?
Patrick Norton's my good buddy. He does a show on our network called This Week in Computer Hardware because he's a hardware guru, and of course he has his own show called Techzilla. On Revision 3. So if you Google any of the names of the people who used to be on Tech TV, this was a cable channel for 6 years. It was just a cable channel for geeks, really. And all of us have gone on, I think, to doing more of the same.
Yeah, more. Well, you know, Soledad O'Brien is with
She's done very well. CNN. Yeah, she's done very well.
Now she's with, I don't know where she's now.
She was at CNN. I don't know where she is either, actually. But well, what can I do for you, Laxman?
Oh, yeah. I use my iPhone 5 to log into my bank, and I want to make sure I don't have any malware. So is there any anti-malware for Apple iPhone 5?
No.
No?
and the good news is you probably don't need it. There is anti-malware on Android devices because, well, see, remember that you cannot make an app for Apple that Apple doesn't approve. And for Apple to approve of an antivirus would be for Apple to admit that there are security issues, and they don't want to do that. So they don't. There is no antivirus on an iPhone. And in the world of Android, you probably don't need an antivirus any more than you do on the iPhone. And both of them have malware, but they're not big problems. But because you don't have to get Google's approval to sell something in the Google Store and the App Store, there are numerous antiviruses for Android. That one might look at that and go, wow, Android must really be an insecure platform. No. It's because Apple doesn't improve any viruses. Now, and also it has to do with the Apple operating system. And this is one of the reasons it's not an issue, is the Apple operating system, each application is very much segregated from the other. They have their own data space. There's no shared data generally. So the good news is, it's very hard to take over an iPhone. So it's safe to use for banking, in other words. Really, the bigger risk, if you ask me, would be the fact that you're doing this on a wireless network. But because all the banking applications use encryption between you, your phone, and the bank itself, I think you're fine. I think it's completely safe. I do all my banking, in fact, on mobile devices these days. It's so easy. Most banks have apps. In fact, if you want to watch our iPad Today show from this past week, twit.tv/IPT, we talked about financial applications, and there's a lot of them. And almost every bank has an app. I have a Bank of America account. I use the Bank of America app. I have an account with USAA, which is a virtual bank. They don't have any branches, and I use an iPhone, an app with that. Chase has very good software. So I think it's safe. I think it's safe. Don't worry about it, in other words. Go ahead and enjoy. It's as safe as any, as a computer. Almost all the malware is on a desktop, isn't it? Thanks for the kind words. I appreciate it, Laxman. Monica in Glendale, Leah Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Monica.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm glad to talk to you. I've listened for a long time.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, nice to meet you.
Thank you. I have a boo-boo TV.
A boo-boo TV?
You gotta say that. What happens when you have 18 grandkids?
What's a boo-boo TV?
Well, I just bought a new Vizio because mine just went zonk.
Uh-huh.
And I've had it for about 3-4 days now.
Yeah.
But what happens is, like, when you watch the live news or you watch one of the, like, lawyer shows or something.
Yeah.
The person in the middle, he's fine and clear. But the people on either end, they grow big and blurry. Like you're in a bubble.
I'm sorry.
It's not funny. Okay.
That's very... you're saying it's a distorted picture, like they're in a bubble.
Yeah, like two old ladies lifting this TV, you know? And I the idea of taking it back.
I think before you do, there might actually be something wrong with it, but I think before you do, what you want to do is go in the menu.
Right.
And there are a number of different picture modes that you can have with high-def television. I think the TV is just set wrong.
Okay.
And so what you don't want is Zoom. That's one of the options on the picture modes. Mm-hmm. What you'd want is something that would – it's a high-def TV, so you want it to be – and it just depends. I don't remember what Vizio calls. I should look on my Vizio and see what calls it in the menu. But what you want is, sometimes they call it 1:1. All right, so I'm going in the menu. Let me see. Oh, we're out of time. Hang on, and I'll find out. Don't go away.
Sure.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm going to play with my menu here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, riding his big old jet airliner into our show and into our hearts is Johnny Jet, our travel guru. Hello, Johnny. Good to see you again.
Nice to be back. I'm in chilly Los Angeles.
Chilly? Wait a minute. Los Angeles, it never rains in Southern California.
It rained yesterday.
Yeah, we had a little rain up here, too, and wind. So I see you're growing a mustache. Is that for Movember?
It sure is. It's for Movember. My wife hates it, but it's for a good cause.
That's what you say. Honey, I have to grow it.
That's right.
I'm Movembering.
That's right, and I don't have to shave.
Movember was thought up by some guys in Australia who didn't want to shave and had to convince their wives it was for a good cause. So they created the Movember movement. It's for men's health awareness.
Prostate cancer.
Yeah. It's a good cause. Are you raising money somehow? Or are you just growing a mustache?
Next year, I guess I'll start raising the money.
Well, I guess there's awareness because people are – look what you just did. You told a million people about Movember, that you're doing the job.
I'll donate some money, yeah.
Yeah. So, Johnny, what can we talk about today?
I thought we'd talk about the FCC and the cell phones on the planes, but before we do that, I want to make sure that by the time this segment's over, these deals are probably going to be gone, but I just saw it might be a mistake fare by United and Norwegian. L.A. to Sydney, round trip, $717, including everything. And there's also deals to Europe and India starting at $149
for
the U.S. each way.
Fly to India for $150?
Each way. But, I mean, still.
I'm going. $300, I could go for the weekend.
I just quickly sent a tweet out, and I posted it in our deals newsletter that we send out whenever there's a crazy deal like this. So it's not on the website. You have to either go sign up to our newsletter, our deals newsletter, or go to my Twitter handle, which is at Johnny Jet. And I actually put it on the Facebook page. But it is incredible deals.
These are sometimes just computer errors, right?
Yeah.
And do they honor them if it is a computer error?
Usually they do.
Wow.
Especially this one because it's not that ridiculously low.
Right. It's not $1.50. If it were $1.50, right, then they might say, oh, that was a mistake.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but let's talk about some technology. So, did you see the FCC wants to reopen the case about allowing passengers to speak on their cell phones up in the air?
Well, now, wait a minute. I thought that the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, ruled that passengers could use non-transmitting devices like Kindles and iPads in the air, but said specifically no phones.
That was the week before. Now the FCC is coming out and saying they're going to reopen this case. You know, I think 7 years ago
The FCC is saying maybe we will allow cell phones on planes?
Yes.
No!
Yes, that's how I feel, too. It's obviously going to cost a lot more money to use your phone up there, but, you know.
Here's what I think. You got to see, Johnny, you're an innocent fella. I don't want to say naive, but you're sweet. You're innocent. You think the best of everyone.
Yep.
You got to understand what's going on. People are petitioning the FCC. They're saying, look, the FAA said there's no interference. Why aren't you allowing phones? FCC knows perfectly well It's not about interference with navigational stuff. It's about the handoffs at high speed, 600 miles an hour, 8 miles up, that just kill the cell towers. And they're going to look into it and come back and say, we've studied this, and I'm sorry, it's not safe. And then no one will bug them again.
I don't know.
They have no intention of allowing this.
No, they allowed it in Europe now. So
what?
So everyone's pointing to Europe. So if Europe does it, so now they're going to say that it's going to be up to the FAA and the airlines to decide.
But oh, well, that's even worse. Now they're saying we don't want to deal with it, so let them be the bad guys. That's terrible.
But the airlines, you know, this is a great revenue stream for them. Think about it. Now they're going to be able to sell Quiet Rose.
Oh, yeah, because I don't know. I mean, really, that's the reason I'm against it. It's not, I guess it would be convenient to be able to use my cell phone, but it's so annoying.
And everyone's ringer going off and has every different ringtone possible.
And nobody talks at a normal level on a cell phone. They all talk like this.
And then when you get on a plane, amplify that by 10 times. It will be a living hell, but I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think the airlines will allow it because, you know, there'll be many fights up in the air.
Have you been on a European flight where cell phones are allowed?
No, I haven't been. I think they just approved it, and I have not been yet. I've been on flights in Europe where you can text. British Airways has a flight from London City Airport to New York.
This I kind of understand. Texting it. Maybe that's what they'll do.
No problem.
Yeah.
Texting, no
problem. I don't care if you want to tippy-tap away on your phone. Just don't pick it up. Just don't
answer.
And
I know they're going to charge more, but there are ways around getting online using Skype, you know, over the internet, using Wi-Fi. So I don't even want to talk about how you can do that since I don't want to, you know.
There is a petition at whitehouse.gov. Maybe this is, I don't know. This is the one I want to sign. Instruct the FCC. This is at the We the People petition site. You know, anybody can make a site, petition on We the People. Instruct the FCC and the FAA that cell phone use is not appropriate on flights. There are only 2,012 signatures. If they get to 100,000 by December 21st, then the White House has to respond.
It looks like they're just...
It just started. So okay. I am now telling the world. We will put a link in the show notes. Go sign this petition. You don't... Is there anybody who really wants people to use cell phones in flight?
There are some people who want it.
Yeah, Mr. I want to show off that I'm a big shot businessman.
The people who think they're important want it.
I need to be able to talk to my secretary.
I mean, it would be nice once in a while, like right before landing or something, or when you take off, saying, hey, they just changed the flight. This is what time we're getting in. But you can do that via text, or you should be able to do that text or email.
Come on.
Frequent travelers all have a monthly pass to Gogo or whatever internet service there is, so they can log on.
Yeah, get on the line. Get online. Don't do it on your phone.
Yeah, I really hope it doesn't happen.
All right. Anything else? We got a minute or two left.
Yeah, I was.
You're
in San
depressing
Francisco.
Me.
I'm depressed myself. Yeah. I was in San Francisco this week. I was actually at Pinterest's headquarters.
Pinterest. Now they probably noticed that Johnny Jets stepped up his social media presence on Twitter, Google+, and Facebook, and they're probably saying, "Hey, you got to pin us a little bit here. Give us a little pin love."
I've been on there for a long time since my wife is a fanatic on Pinterest, and she's been on it since they started.
It strikes me, and I'm going to be very sexist here, that this is something that women seem to prefer to men.
Without a doubt, it's probably 80% female.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy pinning it because when I was a kid, I used to have a cork board and you can, you know, cut out stuff and put your.
I have a Pinterest. I put stuff on there.
What they revealed this week is a travel thing called Place Pins. And I really love it because it's actually just maps everything out. So let's say you can create a board on Australia and put all your places that you want to go there. Or let's just say you're at your studio and you want to, you know, that Italian restaurant that I went to, you can put that on there and it'll do the exact map location.
So this is interesting because I just signed into Pinterest for the first time in months. It says map the things you love near and far. You can now add a beautiful interactive map to any of your boards or create new boards. So they're really this is interesting. This might be a response the fact that it is primarily women that use Pinterest. Something maybe everybody loves to travel. So I'm going to call it my favorite travel spots. This is good. Well,
I think it was because Pinterest has 1.5 million destinations on their website, and I think there's more than 750 million pins of these places on the web, on their website. So they're like, you know what? Travel is a huge driving force in the world and also on these different websites.
Just tell Johnny Jett, huh? At Johnny Jett on the Twitter, johnnyjett.com. Grow that mustache, boy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Connie's in Thousand Oaks, our next caller. Hi, Connie. Leo Laporte here.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. So I have a question regarding seniors and their obstinance.
I'm sorry. Is there someone particular you're talking about?
Yeah, dear old dad.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Love him to death. Okay, but here's the situation.
Can I just say one thing, Connie? Yeah. Mom, stop listening. Okay, now my mom's not listening anymore. We can talk. Let's talk.
Okay. So he thinks, as I find with a lot of seniors, when the screen, his computer, he has a Mac, goes dark, it's off.
Right. Of course he does.
And, of course, right. And I've told him, I said, Dad, it's like leaving your house, but you haven't locked the doors and all the windows are open. And they have gotten statements where someone's used their credit card in San Diego, charged $500.
Oh, okay.
They've had,
wait a minute, though. So he gets up from the computer screen turns off.
Yeah.
Next time he sits down, he comes back, it's on. You're thinking that while the computer's on, somebody's using it?
Well, I'm just think that it's more easily hacked because email is open and everything.
No.
Really?
Really. You can leave your computer on. That's not making it more vulnerable.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
He had to close out everything. Even like when, because he orders stuff online, he didn't finish something and then they went to dinner. And he didn't like lock. Oh, really?
Fine. Yeah.
Oh.
Now, I'll tell you a few things you might want to do for Dad to protect him.
Okay.
Is he using a Windows machine?
Or
a Mac.
Mac.
Okay, good. That's a good start. There's job one. Get him on a Mac.
Oh, okay.
When he goes online, does he go directly online or does he have a router or a wireless access?
No, directly.
Okay. So the next thing, and this is not uncommon. If you only have one computer, you might say, well, I don't need a wireless access point. I don't need a router. But it's a good idea to have a router in between you and your cable modem or DSL modem because that is the first thing that's on the internet. So let's assume, okay, Dad leaves a computer on and a bad guy is trying to, you know, get him. The bad guy will run into this brick wall called the router before he can't talk directly to the computer. So if you're concerned, a router is a good idea as a firewall, okay?
Okay.
The truth is, you want to know how computers get infected?
How?
Not because they're just sitting on the internet, sitting there passively. It's because email comes in with viruses attached.
Right.
Or
tell them to delete those.
Yeah, good. Well, you don't even know. Sometimes it might be from a friend, you know? I mean, seniors, if they're not sophisticated, and there are many seniors very sophisticated, but if they're not sophisticated, I shouldn't say seniors. Anybody who's not sophisticated can fall prey to this.
Right.
In fact, the Swansea Police Department, Swansea, Massachusetts Police Department, fell prey to this. They got an email.
Wow.
They opened it. The email said, hey, you just got a fax. I don't know what it was, but they thought it was a PDF inside. It wasn't. It was an executable called CryptoLocker, and it encrypted all the data on their drive and said, if you ever want to see your drive again, give us $300.
Oh, my God.
This is a police department.
Oh, my God.
And they had 72 hours to do it, and they said, oh, my goodness, I better give them. And they paid the $300. That can happen to a police department. It can happen to anybody, right? So that's an attachment in an email. It will often look like it's something that you really want to act upon. It's your bank. We just received a wire transfer. We've attached the fax to the email. Please open it. You open it. Boom. They got you, boom, before you could do anything.
Right, okay. Oh, okay, so okay. The fact that he's using a credit card and his social and password.
No, because this is another kind of attack. It's called a phishing attack. It looks like he's gone to Amazon.com, but really he's gone to Amazon.com, and it's a fake, I'm making that up, obviously, but there's a fake Amazon that has, it's easy to duplicate the Amazon page, asks for your Amazon you know, Ask says, oh, good. You want to buy this this dishwasher from Amazon.com? Well, you just need your credit card and all that. And then it isn't really Amazon. So those are called phishing with PH, phishing scams. They often come in emails, but they, you know, an email from your bank saying, hey, somebody's tried to log into your account. Please log in. He clicks a link in the email that looks like it's Bank of America, but really it's going to hacker.com.
Got it.
And so you've got to get him to be a little suspicious. Should not click links in emails or on Facebook. You've got to be very careful about the links he clicks. Always make sure it's the page that he thinks is on. It may look exactly like it. Those are the risks, not just leaving your computer on.
Oh, okay. Then, all right. I'm just, you know, worry about them, and I'm all, you know.
I don't blame you.
Totally.
But I don't blame you. But you know what? Ask him. Say, when do you remember when great-grandpa got electricity for the first time? Wasn't he worried the electricity was going to jump out of the socket on the wall and electrocute him? We've all been same thing.
Where did you grow up?
The hacker is not going to jump out of the wall into his computer. But he has to. It's his behavior that you have to watch out for.
Which I do. Okay.
Good.
One other thing. Do you know when we're on hold, we can hear you talking to the people there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I have no secrets. In fact, you really want to get crazy, you can watch me talking to the people there. Yeah, twit.tv. We stream it live, audio and video, 24/7. I have no life.
Okay.
Hey, it's great to talk to you. And I'm really, Connie, I'm really glad you're looking out for Dad.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Thanks, Leo.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Hey, we had a caller earlier who, I forgot to mention this, her TV looked like she was in a bubble. And I was going to tell her how to fix that. If you go, and I tried it with my Vizio. It depends on the TV, unfortunately. And even in one manufacturer's, different models may vary. But if you go to the menu and you go into the setup menu, you'll have different choices. There is the full screen choice, but there's also zoom one, zoom two. You want to pick full screen, okay? You probably have it in a zoom mode, and then it makes it look kind of strange. So make sure it's full screen, which is normal. You also should use HD channels instead of standard def channels. So a lot of times in your cable box, you'll have the standard definition of all your local channels and the high def version. Make sure you use the high def version. You'll get a better result on your screen. It won't look so strange. And if that doesn't fix it, yeah, maybe you got a problem. It could be that the TV's weird. It's messed up. Not full. Well, which one do I want? Now, see, I got to go back to my Vizio. They're saying, no, Leo, not full. All right. So I'm going to press menu. I'm going to go to setup. And I have a number of different choices in setup. If I scroll down to the entry for, it says wide. I have full. I have stretch. You don't want stretch. I have zoom one. You don't want zoom one. So full's the one you want. That's the one you want, at least on my Vizio. See, it's different on every TV. Sometimes it's one-to-one would be right. Sometimes normal would be correct. Try it until it's accurate, until it's what you want. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. We're going to talk to Bernie in Lakewood in just a bit. Bernie, Lakewood, Colorado, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi there.
Hey, Bernie.
Leo, I love your show.
Thank you.
Your shows. The question I have is, I made some slideshows and from old slides.
Fun.
Years ago, burned them onto DVDs.
Okay.
And they work fine, but now I put I put ISOs of those DVDs on the NAS, and I like to be able to play the ISOs back.
Aren't you sophisticated?
So VLC will do it from a computer. But I'd like to be able to do it from the iPad to AirPlay it to Apple TV or something.
Oh, all right. Let me hang on because we've got to take a break for the top of the hour. We'll talk about it. I think we can do this when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by Stamps.com. Why would you ever go to the post office this time of year? Oh, people waiting in line trying to mail me birthday presents. It's crazy. Crazy. You don't have to go to the post office because everything you do at the post office, you can do right at your desk with stamps.com. That's what we do. We don't, my time's too important, my employees' time even, too important to spend time at the post office. What we do is we have a stamps.com account. Then we can use our computers and our printers to print postage. I can print out stamps just like this. You can print forever stamps. You don't have to, though, because the stamps.com always knows exactly what the postage rates are, right? Prints out the right stamps. But they can also print directly on an envelope, which is nice because you can have your corporate logo, your return address. It'll pull all the addresses of the recipients. Let's say you're sending out invoices at the end of the month, right? Goes through your QuickBooks, gets all the addresses, prints right on the envelopes. Couldn't be easier. They're ready to go. You send packages. Maybe, you know, you sell a hand-knitted crocheted sock warmers on Etsy.com. Let's just say on Etsy.com. Or you sell on Amazon or PayPal or eBay. Maybe you're an eBay seller. Stamps.com works with that. So all you have to do is sold. You got the sale. You got the sale. You open Stamps.com. It pulls the address of the recipient right from the eBay page, populates it. You put the package on the scale. Do I have the scale here? Yeah. The free USB scale. I'm going to tell you how you can get this. You plop it on there. Stamps.com. Doesn't even make that sound, but I wish it did. And then it prints out a mailing label. You slap it on the package. If you're sending express or priority mail, I guess they call it Priority Express now, right? Yeah. You can actually email the recipient with a tracking number automatically. You press a button and the mail carrier comes to you and says, where's your packages? I hear you have some packages. Yes, here. Take these. Please. No cost. You even get discounts you cannot get at the post office because, frankly, the post office would love it if you didn't come in. They actually said that to me. They said, can you not have them come in anymore? Just tell them to use stamps.com. You want to try it? Here's your chance. Go to stamps.com. Use our offer code TECHGUY. So, by the way, you're going to see a very attractive offer on the front page. Don't take it. Click the radio microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Enter in TECHGUY. One word is the offer code. Then you'll see an even more attractive picture of me and an even more attractive offer. $110 bonus value includes $55 in free postage over the life of your account. You also get that digital scale I mentioned. You just pay $5 shipping and handling. They'll give you a $5 supply kit to make up for that. And a month, 4 weeks free of stamps.com. What do you got to lose? There's no risk here. Cancel at any time. Keep the postage scale even. Stamps.com. Please use the offer code TECHGUY, all one word, so that that guy there, he looks like he's starving to death. If that guy can afford lunch, this poor fella can afford lunch tomorrow. Stamps.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, hour number three of the Tech Guy radio program. We talk about computers and the internet, but more like about cell phones and home theater and stuff like that. In fact, Bernie had a great home theater question. He has his photos on a server, what they call a network-attached storage device. It's a big hard drive that's on the network, visible to all the machines in the house. And on there, he has some... I have to define all the terms you used, Bernie. He has some ISOs. That is effectively a file that is an image file of a disk, like a CD or a DVD. So those phony disks can be viewed, of course, with the right software, a software that understands the ISO disk image. Do you mount the ISO before you use it with VLC?
I just double-click on the ISO file.
That's neat. So that's, VLC is an amazing program, free program made by French schoolboys, videoland.org, and it allows you to open up a lot of files. I didn't realize you could open ISOs with it. That's pretty sweet. But you can't do the Apple. No, Apple TV doesn't understand ISOs either. So with the Apple TV, you probably... Do you have Macs?
Is that an app?
You have a Macintosh?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I do.
So Macintosh with Lion or later, maybe it was Mountain Lion or later, can AirPlay directly from the computer, right?
Yes.
So what you probably want to do is get a program on the Macintosh that will open those ISOs. You've already got, I'm sure, the hard drive mounted on the Macintosh. You can already see it. So if you're not, you'll need to do that.
Yeah.
And then you'll need to open the ISO with a Macintosh program. Disk Utility probably would do it. But there are other ways to do it as well. So once you mount the ISO, then that means that ISO is visible as if it were a disk in the Mac, you know, inserted into the Macintosh. At that point, you can use any software, including, you know, the preview program built right into the Macintosh to play back the slideshow. And then last step, and I know there are quite a few here, you AirPlay that Macintosh to your Apple TV.
Okay.
So you got mainly the issue is, and you could even just copy these ISOs to the Macintosh. I mean, I understand the reason you keep it on a NAS is so that you don't have to store it on your Macintosh to save space.
Yes.
So you just have to make it as if it's local.
Okay. Now, can I ask you another question?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, if I'd like to possibly redo all of my slideshows because the pictures I scan in, the slides I scanned in are actually higher in quality than a DVD would play back at.
Yes, right.
So what kind of a file format would I have to have?
Well, there's another way you could do this, which is just put the originals on the NAS. And then when you've mounted the NAS, then you could use a slideshow program on your Windows or your Mac or anywhere else to play them back.
Yeah, but I have music behind them, and in other words, it's like a whole...
What do you use to create your slideshows?
Well, unfortunately, these were old programs. I used ULEED DVD Movie Factory.
Excellent stuff, but yes, old. And, and at the time, they felt like, well, we can't put these images in their original format. They'll just be too big, so we're going to squeeze them down, and that reduced quality, right?
Yeah.
So, and getting an ISO requires that same thing, too, because an ISO is a CD image that's no more than 700 megabytes. That doesn't hold very many images unless you squish them.
Yeah, but I do have a Blu-ray burner now.
I wouldn't even do that because you're going to have the same problem then down the road. What you really want is a way to slideshow the originals.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be very simple. Use iPhoto, for instance, to create, and you can have music and all that stuff, but just create a slideshow out of the originals. In other words, don't save the slideshow out as a discrete thing because when you do that, all slideshow programs, including iPhoto, will squish the image down. What you want is, you could use iPhoto and iDVD, burn it out, but then you're going to have the same problem just down the road. They won't be the full quality. You want to keep those original photos and the original highest quality you've got. Make a slideshow out of them that refers to the images, doesn't squish them down. And then don't just save that slideshow in iPhoto and play it back through AirPlay. Don't create a... You'll be basically duplicating what you did last time. You're creating a disc now. Yeah, it's a bigger disc. It's better quality, but it's still going to be reduced quality from the originals. So let's not. That's just kicking the ball down the road. Let's solve this problem. Continue to use the originals in your slideshows, and that will work fine until you save it out as a file. So just don't. Melinda Sherman Oaks, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Melinda. Thanks for hanging on. I'm sorry I kept you on hold so long.
You talking to me?
Yeah. Is your name Melinda?
Yes.
Then it must be you, unless there's another name. Okay. No, yes, it's you, Melinda.
Thank you. Yes. Listen, I didn't hear it. I got a new laptop. It has Windows 8, and I really cannot stand it. I don't even want to... 8.1 is not going to help what I can't stand about this.
What is it you can't stand?
Oh, I'm a list maker. I'm not a tile girl.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I completely understand. In fact, wouldn't it be nice if you could turn on your computer and instead of going to tiles, it would go to the desktop? And wouldn't it be nicer still is if instead of that silly tile menu, you actually had the old-fashioned Windows 7 menu right on there? Wouldn't that be awesome? Wouldn't it be nice if you could launch? Go ahead.
Find and run. We're really sacred, but they kind of wipe those out.
Well, you don't now. I got to tell you, this is an issue that I can solve for you in Windows 8. You know, you just eliminate the find part and the run part, and you just instead of doing that in the tile world, you start typing the name of the program, and then hit return when you see it on the screen. That's all you have to do.
Well, remember when it would go search all programs at the bottom of Windows?
Yeah, you don't have to do that anymore.
I want to do that.
I know, but I'm just saying, pretend you did Command F pretend you did that. Instead, just start typing the, literally in the Tile World, if you start typing the name of the program, it will find it. I know. Okay. Well, and anyway, I can help you get back to the,
because I know you're trying.
No, no, I'm very trying. I can tell I'm trying. I'm trying too hard.
I do have a copy of Windows 7 that I have for my old computer, which has to go in to be repaired. So I've got the disks. You know, there's no, what do you call it, startup disk or anything in Windows 7, correct?
Well, there is a disk. You can't do it without a disk. Hey, here's one more thing. One more thing, okay? One more thing. I'm going to try really hard to keep you from going back to Windows 7, mostly because Windows 8 can be made to look exactly like Windows 7, and it is better in other respects. Go to Stardock, Stardock.com. They have a $5 program called Launch 8 that puts the start menu back in with, yes, your run command. They also have, if you want to use it, they have a program that will make sure that it always starts at the desktop, although now with Windows 8.1, you can use that as a setting. And they even have a little program called Mixter that will launch these tile, or Modern Mix, rather, that will launch these tiled programs as windowed programs, just like you're used to. So there's three little programs there. You really only need two of them if you're at Windows 8.1, that will make it exactly like Windows 7.
Well,
okay, or you can reinstall Windows 7. You can.
Is it hard? Could I do it?
Yeah. You'd have to, now, you have to have the serial number for it.
Yes. You mean for the, yes, I do.
Okay. And what you'll do is do you have a CD or a DVD player in the computer?
Yes.
Yeah. So you'll take your Windows install disk and you'll run it. Now, if it's a recovery, is it from that computer?
No. I upgraded a Dell.
Okay. Is it a Dell recovery disk?
No, there is no recovery disk with Windows.
I
didn't get one.
Is there? So it's a Windows install disk?
I installed it.
Okay, hang on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I talked off the air with Melinda a little bit. I am completely sympathetic. Here's what, you know, I think happened with Melinda. She, probably a dint of great labor, got a computer and installed Windows 7 on it, learned it, knows how to use it. She knows start, run. She learned how to use it at probably spending a lot of time and energy on it. And then Microsoft pulled the rug right out from under her. Not just her, almost 200 million other people, by shipping a new version of Windows that was completely different. Now, I understand why, you know, companies have to move on and sometimes you have to change things. But I also understand her desire not to start all over again and learn a new operating system. And she doesn't really like it. And you know what? She's right. Because what Microsoft's doing is making a transition from a desktop operating system to a tablet touch-based operating system. That's a big shift, a huge shift. Think about it. From using a keyboard and a mouse on a screen that's at arm's length, drop-down menus, overlapping windows, a desktop, task manager, all of that they want to get rid of. All of that they want to get rid of. They want to do, Microsoft sees as its future, rightly or wrongly, but they've decided as a company, their future is something that has no keyboard, has no mouse, has no desktop, has no drop-down menus. They want something that is like an iPad, that's a tablet. They really believe that the future is the tablet. They are in this transitional period where their operating systems are half tablet, half desktop. That's confusing as heck. And I think it's not unreasonable for a user to say, either, as Melinda does, hey, I learned how to use Windows 7, and now you're telling me I got to learn a whole new operating system. Not going to happen. I don't want to. It's also reasonable for users to say, I don't want to have to be a party to your gradual transition. I don't want to have to go through that, your awkward adolescence. Let me know when you get it done, when it's done, and then I'll go. That's why a lot of businesses, most businesses, are not buying Windows 8. They don't want to retrain people, and they don't want to be, you know, a guinea pig in this transition. They're going to wait. Maybe in Windows 9 or 10, when Microsoft finally figures it out, they'll think about it. But Melinda, like a lot of us, is stuck. She doesn't have an IT department. She's doing this all on her own. So unfortunately, what Melinda wanted to do, and I discourage her from it, is find a Windows 7 disk from some other computer and install it on their new computer. Better, frankly, to modify your Windows 8 to make it more like Windows 7. And that is totally doable. If you have Windows 8.1, and I strongly recommend you update to Windows 8.1. In general, you want to keep up with Microsoft, only because that's where all the security patches will be. That's where they're going. They're dragging you. May not be fun, but they're dragging you along for the ride, so you might as well just go. Ride the horse in the direction it's going. It's a lot easier than riding it in a direction it's not going. But you can use Windows 8.1, and one of the things you can do is say, I want to boot up. When I boot up the machine, I don't want to see Tile World. I want to go right to the desktop. And then using this $5 application from stardock.com called Start and the number 8, puts a real Windows 7 style start menu on that desktop. Now, if you didn't know better, you'd say, "Hey, I'm kind of using Windows 7, except that you've got all the advantages of the updated Windows 8." And I think that's still not perfect, by the way. A Tile World will appear from time to time. You accidentally hit the Windows key, suddenly you're in Tile World again. She said, how do I get out of Tile World? Well, the best way to do that, you can do it with the Windows D key. We'll put you in the desktop if you have a keyboard. Best thing to do though, is put that Windows, the desktop tile, right there in the upper left-hand corner of Tile World so that it's easy to tap. Or if you just hit return, whatever's in the upper left-hand corner of Tile World will get launched automatically. So if you suddenly get in your Tile World, see, that was one of the complaints she had. I get in the Tile World, these tiles, I don't know what to do. I can't get out of it. I want to get to my desktop. It's kind of a disconnect. I understand. And I'm very sympathetic. And this is, unfortunately, we're a little bit at the mercy of Microsoft as it goes through this transition. It's not doing it elegantly. It's not doing it well. I don't know if it's even possible to do it elegantly and well. I really don't. I think, I am comfortable enough with technology and with computers and have to learn new stuff all the time. So I just learn it and go ahead, you know. But for somebody who spent a lot of time and energy learning the old way of doing things, it's not a happy time. Just not a happy time. And I don't shake my fist and say, curse you, Microsoft. I don't, because I think that they felt as a company, and they're probably right, that they had to. They looked at what's happening with tablets in general, and they realized, you know, the world is moving away from what we do. We need to keep up. Scott in Ontario, Canada. Hi, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Hey. Big fan.
Thank you.
I've been a fan since the Call for Help days.
Thank you.
I'm looking to upgrade from a regular hard drive to a solid-state hybrid drive. And I was wondering what brands you would recommend and how reliable are they?
So right now there's three kinds of hard drives. There's the spinning drives that we've all been used to for so long. And they come in high capacities, and the cost per gigabyte is very low. We're talking maybe a dime a gigabyte or something. It's very cheap. On the other end of the spectrum, there's solid state drives. They're made of the same kind of flash memory as compact flash in your camera or SD cards in your camera. It's a solid state non-moving memory. Now, you're talking about a third thing that kind of bridges the gap. It's called a hybrid drive. It has a little bit of both. And I don't like them. And every test I've seen says a hybrid drive is kind of the worst of both worlds, not the best. The reason people like solid-state drives is they're really fast. They're fast for several reasons. One, they're random access. You know, a spinning drive, you have to move the head around. The access time takes a while. Sometimes you even have to wait for the drive to spin around. You know, you read something and wait for it to come around again to read the next thing. That takes more time. None of this is a solid-state memory, a solid-state drive. You just read it. Plus, the reading is much faster. Writing is even much faster. Not as much, but much faster. So putting a solid state drive in an existing computer or buying a new computer with a solid state drive can make worlds of difference in the perceived speed of the computer. It's not thinking any faster, but it boots faster, much like 10 times faster. It loads programs faster. You don't get much of that benefit in a hybrid drive. The best choice, really, in my opinion, to be use a solid state drive for your boot and your applications. And then because it's expensive per gigabyte, use a spinning drive for data storage. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking about hybrid drives as an alternative to either a solid-state drive or a spinning drive. And based on all the benchmarks I've seen of hybrid drives, they just don't deliver. They just don't deliver. And there are even, and you see this in laptops, Intel has a technology, I can't remember what they call it, smart drive or something, that uses a little small solid-state and a big spinning. All of this is because solid-state drives are more expensive per gigabyte. People want a lot of storage. I would say two things. A, you don't need as much storage as you think. In fact, the demand for storage, I think, is going down as we keep more and more of our stuff in the cloud or on, you know, central drives, network-attached storage, that kind of thing, external drives. So in many cases, whereas you might have had a 2-terabyte drive in the PC that you bought 5 years ago, 128 gigs, 256 gigs, plenty, especially on a laptop. So, and by the way, prices on SSDs are dropping rapidly. I suspect we won't see spinning drives very commonly, except in the lowest price computers going forward. I haven't bought a computer that didn't have an SSD drive as its primary drive in 2 years. I really like solid-state drives. They're faster. Now, what Apple's done is taken it to the next level with their newest laptops, and they'll do this with the Mac Pro when it comes out next month. They take the SSD drive, and instead of putting it on a SATA connector, that's the serial ATA connector that all hard drives have used up to now in the last few years, they don't put it on the SATA connector because the SATA connector is a bottleneck, frankly. SSDs are so fast, they can move data faster than that connector can move it. So Apple has now started putting the solid-state drives on the PCI Express bus. Holy cow. Now we're talking some speed. These Express buses are 10 times faster than the SATA buses. They can move data, finally, at the speed the SSD is capable of. And the benchmarks I've seen on solid-state drives that are connected via PCI Express are incredible. Even faster. You get the benefit on SATA 2 and 3. You get some benefit. But for maximum results, and I suspect going forward most computers will do this, a solid-state drive on a PCIe bus. Ooh. Ooh. Smoking. 8888-ASK-LEO. Mike is in Trabuco Canyon, California, our next caller. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you, Leo? Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I have a veterinary clinic, and there are a number of really, really nice videos that we've recorded on the cable box. I'd like to be able to transfer them down to a DVD so I can just show them in the exam room at my or in the reception room at my clinic.
Oh, you might like to do that, but that's because you're a pirate. And it'll be over our dead bodies, says the cable and television industry.
Oh, you can't do that at all.
They don't want you to do that because they're afraid that you will do that. Take those DVDs, put a blanket out in front of the veterinary clinic and start selling them. Okay. The fear of piracy in the motion picture television industry is so great that they have made it so that the cable DVRs are sealed boxes. The only way you can get those off is through something we call the analog hole. And this is something that's much harder. They tried to legislate against it. It's much harder for them to block. You can play it back as if you're playing it into a television set, but instead record it.
Can I do that just through the HDMI that goes out to the TV?
Well, no. Because the HDMI has something called HDCP, High Def Content Protection. And it requires that everything on the chain be HDCP compliant. And, of course, recorders are not.
So how do I play it out then?
So you have to play it out. That's why we call it the analog hole. HDMI is digital. You have to play it out through the analog connectors, component or composite.
Oh, okay.
And then you'll have to buy something for a computer that will record, you know, that will take a composite or component input and record it onto the hard drive. It's expensive.
Oh, it is.
And it's a pain in the butt because you have to do it in real time. For every hour of content, it takes an hour to record it. They got us.
Okay.
And you know what? You're not a pirate. Although they probably would argue, well, you really should buy those DVDs if you're going to play them.
I would even buy them, but I don't even know how to buy them.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if they really want to solve this, make it easy for us to do what we want to do with our content. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. So these are on Discovery or something, shows that you see on some channel?
Right, exactly.
Animal Planet or whatever.
Animal Planet.
Yeah, that's a Discovery network. So if Animal Planet were smart, and they might, they would sell these on iTunes or Amazon. They could sell them as digital if they wanted, but they would sell them in some form that you could get them.
Okay.
But they do really, they encrypt this stuff on the hard drive. They put copy protection on the HDMI cable. You really have to take advantage of what they call the analog hole. And the only reason they haven't locked that down is because it's so hard to do on your end. And the quality is degraded because you've gone to analog.
Okay.
It won't be high def. It'll be 480.
Well, that wouldn't be too
that's
bad.
That's fine. I'm sure.
What
yeah.
we're doing with it,
right.
it wouldn't be that.
Do you want to play it for the animals?
No, for the no, we're playing it for the clients in the exam.
Oh, okay. I think when Ozzy gets lonely, you know, he wouldn't mind looking at another dog romping. Yeah, what Animal Planet wants you to do, of course, is to buy another cable subscription and put a TV in the waiting room.
Okay. So if I did try and play it through the analog, the composite or component out, what do I record into?
Well, you see, this is why they don't mind if you do this, because now you have to buy a video capture card. I recommend the Pinnacle video capture cards, and to a computer, and then record it on the hard drive, and then you have to have a DVD burner in the computer, and then you're going to you see what I mean? This is not worth. This is too much. Go to the Animal Planet website. They'll probably have a few of those for sale.
All right, I'll do that.
Yeah, sorry, Mike. Everybody, no. I don't blame you. You know, you've got a DVR. You say, but I could see it in there practically. I can practically see the video right in there sitting on that disc. If only, it's on a hard drive even. If only I could just, you know. No. They've locked it all down. They've locked it all down. There is a bill in front of Congress that would at least make these channels a la carte. You know, right now, you want to get Animal Planet, you got to buy 50 other channels you don't want. You know, hey, it's a business. This is America. They have a right to make a profit. Of course, we have a right to say we don't want to buy those 50 other channels. We want to buy the one. There is a bill in Congress to unbundle all of this stuff, which means it probably has no chance in the world. Sorry, Mike. Jack, Westminster, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi, Leo. Listen, I have a Mac, and it's the old version operating system X, and I'd like to know if I can put a desktop publishing software on it.
Oh, yeah.
I can.
Apple invented desktop publishing, going way back to PageMaker and Apple LaserWriter. Remember that?
Oh.
The big desktop publishing software for Apple's is InDesign. You said it's old. Now, OS X is not old, but maybe it's an old. What is the computer?
It's an.
How old is it?
It's about. I bought it. I got it in 2008.
Oh, that's fine. So it's not a cheap program, but it's the program that probably most magazines, newspapers use for desktop publishing. It's called InDesign. It's from Adobe.
Okay.
And it's you know, you can buy it for $50 a month.
Okay.
Actually, InDesign by itself is only $20 a month. Desktop publishing is still most commonly done on a Macintosh. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Red, the red one. Our show today brought to you by Ting.com. You know about Ting? Have I talked about Ting? I've talked about Ting. T-I-N-G. In fact, if you go to techguy.ting.com, you can take a look at what Ting has to offer. Ting is an MVNO, mobile virtual network operator. What they do is they sell Sprint service, but they decided they wanted to do it right. So there's no contracts. There is no early termination fee. In fact, they have an ETF relief program. If you're stuck on another carrier, they will pay your early termination fee when you move to Ting, up to 25% of your ETF, up to $75 per device. Just buy that device through Ting, port your number over, submit your final bill with the ETF from your previous carrier. You find out more at ting.com/ETF. The other thing about Ting is you only pay for what you use. So you only pay for the gigabytes you use, the minutes you use, the texts you use. You don't pay up front. You pay at the end of each month. There's no penalty for using more, there's no cost for using less. There's no overage charges, no add-on charges either. Voicemails included, caller ID. Better yet, tethering and hotspot included. Three-way calling, call forwarding, and other features. All part of Ting at ting.com. Unlimited devices on a plan. It's just $6 per month per device, and then you add the usage. By the way, all of the minutes, the data, the texts are shared. So it's great for a small business. It's great for a family. You could save so much money. The average monthly bill, $21 per device for Ting customers. How much are you paying for your phone? The average annual savings per device for a business with 11 to 20 employees, $440. And they've got all the hot phones. You bet. And in some cases, you can move your existing Sprint phone over too. No hold customer support, 855-TING-FDW. If you call them anytime during business hours, a rep empowered to fix the problem, to help you, will get on the line and will not get off the line till it's done. They will not put you on hold. And, of course, they have great support, too, at help.ting.com. Forums, help ticketing, video system, video tutorials, video startup guides. So here's the deal. You're going to purchase your mobile device from Ting. You'll get it in 2 to 5 days. You'll activate your device. You can select a new phone number, port an existing one. Of course, they'll do that. And they break your rates out by minutes, text messages, and megabytes, and bill you at the end of the month just for what you've used. I love Ting. You will, too. TechGuy.Ting.com. You'll also save $25 on your first Ting device when you sign up there. TechGuy.Ting.com. Start saving today.
A burning ring of fire.
Love is a burning thing.
Yeah. Hello.
And it makes
my name is Leo.
A fiery ring.
Da, da, da. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Burning in that ring of fire.
I don't know how this happened. Here we are almost at the end of the show. And unfortunately, despite all my efforts, we got Dick DiBartolo on the phone.
Nice, so, nice. You're a buddy. You're a buddy.
Dickie D, he's Mad Magazine's maddest writer, one of my heroes ever since I was 6 years old. And he talks every week with us about gadgets. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing, pal?
I am in fine fettle.
Oh, good. Yeah, you look good in that fettle.
Yeah, nice. My mom knitted it. It's extra wool. So what do you got for us?
You know, we have a free gadget. I don't know if you've tried yours yet. I've been playing with mine. I like it, but I can't get the hang of it. Anyway, it's the Q4 keyboard.
Yeah, I did download it and install it.
Did you try it? Yeah, okay.
It's interesting.
And also, I love the fact that when I saw the first demo of it, I said, oh, what, iOS only? He said, no, Android only.
Yeah.
I said, fine, finally an app, finally. Android only. Yeah. All right, so the Q4 keyboard, it's kind of bizarre. You download it. It's a free app. And you start out that the entire keyboard is in 6 sections. So in other words, the object here is you don't hit the individual key, you hit the color group that the key is in. So this cuts down drastically on the keystrokes. And the recognition software is pretty good. I mean, at the show, I said to the guy, all right, I'm just going to type here arbitrarily and then look up and see what the keyboard came up with. And I had just typed, this is the craziest keyboard I ever saw. I can't imagine what this keyboard is typing. And it got all but one word correct. But then to correct it, you hit the word and then a series of words come down and then you highlight the one you want. The object is that when you get really, really proficient at it, you can reduce it to 4 color ovals So you don't see no keys at all. And they are translucent or transparent, so they hang over your keyboard. So the object is full real estate without the keyboard taking up any space. And as I said, the thing is, since it's a free app, if you want to play one day with it, just in the Play Store, look for Q4. As soon as you type Q4, Q4 keyboard pops up.
And I imagine at some point they'll make money by charging for extras in some way.
Yeah, that's what the guy said. You know, they're looking to build the base, and then they'll think about how to
make some. It's the modern world. Nobody needs to make money anymore. Just give it away.
No, give it away.
I did try it. And, you know, it's a great idea. And, you know, it gets smarter with time, and your keyboard gets simpler and faster with time. And I probably didn't give it enough time, but it's just... I found it a little bit frustrating. And, you know, I text so much now. I type so much. I have a new email on my phone that I was really reluctant to, take the time to learn it, I guess.
Yeah, yes, the learning curve, exactly. Yeah. I still just dictate with the microphone. And
I do a lot of that, frankly.
To be the fastest for me.
There's a reason why it's not on Apple. Apple does not allow you to use alternate keyboards. You have to use the Apple keyboard or nothing. So there is no market in keyboards in iOS. There are quite a few choices on Android. My favorite is SwiftKey, followed by Swipe. Google has
Swipe's excellent.
Swipe is good. Yeah. And Google has its own Google keyboard you can download from the Play Store that's free. All three of them do the same thing, which is instead of tapping away, you draw from letter to letter in a swiping motion. And I actually am quite fast with that. I like that.
Wow. Yeah, Matt is coming up with his own keyboard. It's just four letters. And right now, it needs work. You can send memos that only use those four letters. So I think it needs
way
work.
To go. Yeah. Hey, have you played the What the Heck Is It contest? Gizwiz.biz. It's a chance for you to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. Autographed by this guy right here, Dickie D. Last month's contest was a Pringles can, a Pringles storage container.
Yeah, for your lunchbox.
This one's quite obviously a Bluetooth headset, but I could be wrong.
Could be. Could
12 be Mad Magazines for the right answer. Did you get anybody get the right answer on the Pringles can?
Oh,
a lot of people.
Your listeners are nothing but junk food hounds.
Wow.
I got about 70 correct answers.
So this one, I don't know. I mean, it looks like a Bluetooth headpiece. Obviously, it couldn't be. That would be too easy.
Well, you know, I'm not saying.
24 Mad Magazines for the wrong answer. So just make up some Fakatka answer. You'll probably win. And all you got to do, go to the website for the rules and all of that stuff. You have till the end of the year. You'll be playing for the February 2014 issue of Mad Magazine. And Dick always signs, it's funny because he signs it all different names. You never know who you're going to, you get Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because, you know, I don't have the time to when the emails come. So I just pre-sign them.
Hey, Dickie D, thank you. Stick around. We're going to do the Gizfiz right after the show. We gotta go now.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Dickie.
I'll be here Tuesday.
Right. Tuesday we do the Gizwiz podcast on most of these same podcast networks. Frank's in Temecula, California. Hi, Frank.
Hi, how you doing, Leo?
I am very well.
I actually called about a year ago. I was the Marine that had a laptop, my screen got broken.
Oh, yeah.
Snapped the thing in half and turned it into a desktop.
Snapped it right off because the keyboard, the CPU, everything was fine. It's just the tablet, the screen that was messed up.
Pretty much. Basically, I'm calling today. I have a daughter now, and she's 1 year old.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you so much.
Are you back home now, or are you still...
Yes, I'm back home.
That's great. So you get to be there for her. That's wonderful.
Yeah. For the holidays. But basically, I'm looking for a good a tablet. We had an iPad, but my luck, unfortunately, it got ran over.
You're tough on hardware, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't do too well with it.
You Marines, I tell you. I tell you. All right. So, but now, you know what you might want to look at, especially for a one-year-old, I got to tell you, the iPad software really is better than anything else for kids. That's where all the good apps are.
Okay. So
but you might want to look at either a refurbed or, you know what, I think the Apple's still selling the old iPad mini, which is a nice size for a one-year-old, for less. I think $299. So at that point, it's pretty competitive with anything else that's out there. And then, and you get the advantage of all this kids' software out there. I would get a good rubber case for it, too.
Yeah, something protective.
Yeah.
Probably get a
so either an iPad 2 or an iPad, the old last year's iPad mini, that's plenty good for a one-year-old. You're being very, a generous dad.
Yeah.
What's her name?
Well, you need something to help her with Madison.
Hi, Matt. I hear Madison in the background. Hi,
yeah,
Madison.
Yeah, she's right here.
I think it's kids and iPads just seem to go together so nicely. And,
okay.
Yeah.
And it has time control restrictions on it, right?
Yes. Parental controls are there. You know, with a one-year-old, you could just take it away. It's when they get to 8 years old. Then you have to fight, right? I just think iPads are just the best for little kids. And you know, sometimes people buy at roughly the same cost, Leapfrogs or Fisher prices. No, get them a real iPad. I think you're a great dad. Thank you for your service. I really appreciate it, Jeff. Leo Laporte. I'm sorry, Frank. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.